Hello, John Dennis here on Tuesday the 3rd of February. Today, Britain creaks under the strain of the heaviest snowfall for 18 years.
The main cost will be in companies' cash flow and the timing of certain payments that they have to make. And if they're not able to make these payments, then they just might go bust a little earlier.
Also today, Sri Lanka claims it's almost defeated the Tamil Tiger rebels. But the media have been banned from the conflict zone.
Many governments, particularly in developing countries that are under pressure, are increasingly adopting this type of approach.
And as a new CD celebrates the achievements of female rappers, we hear from one of the genre's originals.
I gazed on the forest and burned out the Sahara Desert. With a packet of goat's meat and a change of clothes, I crossed it in 2 hours. I'm a gazelle.
Guardian Daily with John Dennis on guardian.co.uk.
But first, Sandy Waugh with the news headlines and the papers.
The heavy snow is moving north through England and into Scotland and Wales today. In spite of a forecast of up to 12 inches due to fall, most main roads still remain open. There are due to be school closures for another day in parts of the South East and the Midlands. The train companies have been working through the night and hope to be getting mainline services in the South and South East back to normal operation. Airports have managed to keep the runways clear, but there may still be delays after many cancellations yesterday. The European Union's joined Canada in warning the US government about its economic recovery package. A Buy American clause in the bill tries to ensure that only American iron and steel will be used in new construction work. The EU ambassador in Washington warned that it could set a dangerous precedent. Meanwhile, Republican senators are trying to get more support for home buyers as they debate the $800 billion economic plan. And Democrats are being pressured by their colleagues to reduce the cost. President Obama intends to nominate a Republican as his Commerce Secretary today as part of his attempt to get a consensus on the recovery. Australia has followed other countries in announcing its own package to stimulate the economy. Half of the $26 billion plan would be spent on schools and infrastructure, another quarter on helping poor families. The plan helped to stabilise most Asian stock markets, which rose slightly, apart from Japan. The Indonesian authorities have rescued nearly 200 boat people drifting in a wooden boat off Aceh. They're believed to be refugees from Burma. This is the second group of Burmese from a Muslim ethnic minority who've tried to escape by sea in the last month. American scientists believe that drugs for diabetes may help sufferers from Alzheimer's. A team from the USA and Brazil have managed to demonstrate that insulin can help slow or prevent their memory loss involved in Alzheimer's. Football and striker Robbie Keane, who left Tottenham for Liverpool 6 months ago, has gone back to the club he abandoned. Keane has signed a 4-year contract with Spurs for £12 million, £8 million less than he was sold for. Of course, that's the story that dominates the back pages. Rafa's £8 million blunder, says The Sun. Frozen out, says The Mirror. Rafa tells Robbie, return to Spurs or you'll rot here. The Independent believes that captaincy tempts Keane back to Tottenham fold. Two other sports stories. The Guardian reports that Arsenal are frustrated still in their attempts to bring St. Petersburg Arshav into the club, though The Express thinks the opposite. Both papers agree that one-time young English rugby star Danny Cipriani of Wasps has so far fallen down the pecking order that he's not getting into the England squad for the opening of the Six Nations Championship. On the front pages, the story is nothing but snow. Day the snow came and Britain stopped, says The Guardian. Snowbound Britain, says The Telegraph, and oh snow is The Mirror's headline. The Times warns us, and now the ice, while The Mail and The Express are fearful that it's going to last all week. More on the day's news and breaking stories at guardian.co.uk.
The heaviest snowfall for 18 years caused chaos across Britain yesterday. Thousands of schools were closed and air, rail and road services were all severely disrupted. The Prime Minister Gordon Brown said the authorities were doing everything in their power to restore key transport links. Matthew Weaver has been charting developments on guardian.co.uk. He says the Met Office predicts that the cold snap will continue today.
Well, this is my debut as a weatherman. Cold with snow in many places. Parts of Northern Ireland, Scotland and England, except central southern, will see further sleet and snow. The rest of England starting icy, then brighter with a few wintry showers.
And yesterday, Matt, you charted the snowfall on the internet, doing a bit of live blogging for The Guardian. You know, how did it sort of unfold online?
Well, when I was a kid, it was good just to get out and chuck snowballs at your mates. But these days, you've got to update photos of yourself chucking snowballs at your mates to Facebook and to and Flickr and other websites, and indeed make films on YouTube. On the micro blogging site Twitter, updates about the snow are the most popular subjects on the entire network, outstripping even the Super Bowl. And there's a guy called Ben Marsh who mapped all the tweets in the UK about snow with little snowflakes. And by the end of the day, the entire map of Britain was caked in snow.
Meanwhile, in the non-virtual world, many of us were struggling to get to work, of course. I had to dig my cab out of the snow, literally, yesterday, in order to get to The Guardian. The country virtually ground to a standstill for many of us.
It started in the morning with people filming outside their bedroom window, as you do, looking out over a completely... snowy scenes, and then their struggle into work. There was a wonderful footage of a guy skiing to work.
Well, the snow's also had an impact on the economy, as economist Benjamin Williamson from the Centre for Economics and Business Research think tank explains.
To be honest, the costs of these types of snow days are usually over-exaggerated amongst the hype of people having the day off work. But in 2009, with the recession as it stands, it might actually have an impact on businesses. We found that cash flow will be the main problem caused by the heavy snow we've seen in the last couple of days.
So, I mean, how would it affect the cash flow? I suppose if firms are waiting for payments and the snow's holding the payments up even further, that could cause them problems. Is it that sort of thing?
Indeed. I mean, there are many, many businesses, particularly in the retail and construction sector at the moment, that are very close to bankruptcy. You have to realise that. It's been a very torrid time in those sectors, and transportation sector particularly as well. And it would just... if the snow really causes problems in those sectors over the next couple of days as well, we could just find that it would bring them that much closer to bankruptcy. And we've actually done some back-of-the-envelope calculations on this, and we find that the hit from the big freeze is likely to bring businesses that were going to go bust anyway, bring them closer to do so. And we estimate there's about 2,000 to 3,000 businesses that fall into this category of early failures.
What about the effects on productivity of this heavy snow?
It's interesting. We've done some research on this in the past. In 2004, in November, we did a report for the Weather Risk Management Association. And we've actually found that these kind of costs and productivity shocks are largely over-exaggerated. I mean, people will go back to work this week and they will do all the things that they were supposed to do in the early days of the week. And they will buy the groceries and the items that they were going to buy anyhow. So there really isn't a large productivity shock, but as I say, the main cost will be in companies' cash flow and the timing of certain payments that they have to make. And if they're not able to make these payments, then they just might go bust a little earlier.
What about the high street? Because, I mean, it's been struggling as the recession gets worse, and retailers won't be welcoming this poor weather, will they?
They certainly won't, and they will find some kind of disruption. But as I say, most of these things are due to timing. People will just delay the purchases that they would have necessarily made. One area where we might see a little downturn is in passing trade, i.e. those kind of off-the-cuff purchases that you would usually make if you happened to be where you usually were at that time. But we do see certain costs in the economy that are actually offset, such as heating. I mean, the utility companies are bound to have a good couple of days. We also might find things like takeaway food and mobile phone calls. All these kind of offset the loss in productivity that we've seen from the heavy snow.
Benjamin Williamson from the Centre for Economics and Business Research. But Matt Weaver, it's not all been doom and gloom, has it?
No. People took this opportunity to really bunk off yesterday. There are numerous people, shots of people building snowmen, sledging on Primrose Hill. One guy even snowboarding down Primrose Hill. We had updates all day of the struggle of Guardian staffers getting to and from work. One guy, Sam Jones, staggered in. It took him 2.5 hours to get to work, only to discover that he shouldn't have been in.
and London Mayor Boris Johnson suspended the city's congestion charge.
Yeah, just for 24 hours only. He said it as a reward for Londoners struggling into work. He said that the congestion charge will be suspended. I don't all drive at once.
So is this going to continue for the rest of the week?
The long-term forecast is for snow and a bit of rain, so perhaps not.
Well, enjoy it while it lasts, as some people in Leeds were doing yesterday. The Guardian's Martin Wainwright reports.
I'm in Roundhay in Leeds after beating a retreat from Immingham and Scunthorpe. Lots and lots of snow. There's been traffic chaos here and lots of people haven't gone into work, but the other side of the snow is in evidence here in Roundhay, and I'm just going to talked to families who were sledging on this hillside overlooking North Leeds. Excuse me, could I have a word with you? I'm from the Guardian newspaper. Yeah. May I just ask if you brought the family out here?
Yeah, these three, yeah, three girls.
School closed then?
Yeah, John Smeaton closed and All Saints Primary School.
Can you tell me about the sledging here?
It's good.
Is it? Do you get all the way down to the bottom?
Yeah.
At least you had sledges. A lot of people don't have sledges, do they?
I know, they just come with what they can find. Someone's got a bit of car seat up there as well, I think.
You're right. Can I just stop you before you slide down? Sorry, I'm from the Guardian newspaper. Can I just have a quick word? Is school closed today?
Oh, they're at preschool, so they're not at school today.
All right, good. And so you brought them out?
I'm having more fun than them, I think.
I've just been listening on the car radio to everybody saying, you know, it's terrible, nobody can go anywhere and all that. But it's nice to see the other side of it here.
Definitely, yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, now there's somebody here going down on a lilo. Can I just catch you before you go? Oh. Is this your invention?
No, you've seen a few people come down on.
And is it good?
Yeah.
Sorry to delay you. Could you tell me what's good about sledging on a lilo?
It's good because sliding down the hills.
Right, yeah, you're just about to go off. Well, is there anything that you might hit at the bottom?
A stone or something.
Well, I hope you don't. Have you ever punctured it?
Yeah. I think. I think so. It's her lilo.
Okay, well, let's watch you go then.
Okay, get on.
Have you been able to get off work today, or do you not?
I wasn't working. I was just off today anyway. So yes. We've come down here. Got them this morning. Been back to the shop, and they've sold out. No more sledges left.
It always happens, doesn't it? I think we're reduced to bin liners at home. So do you want the snow to stay, or do you want it to go?
Want it to stay. We haven't had a good snow for years, have we?
We had a good day for years.
Martin Wainwright reporting from Leeds, and there's full coverage of the weather today at guardian.co.uk/weather. Also on the Guardian's website, how to make a snowman, guardian.co.uk for that. And Patrick Barkham meets Barack Obama's stepmother, Kezia, in Bracknell, guardian.co.uk/America to read about that. And our art critic Jonathan Jones goes behind the scenes at the Tate, guardian.co.uk/arts. The 25-year struggle between Sri Lanka and Tamil Tiger rebels is almost over, according to the Sri Lankan government. After a fierce offensive by Sri Lanka's military, the rebels are now contained in an area spanning 115 square miles. Well, the website TamilNet, which claims to report the point of view of the Tamil Tigers, has reported that the Sri Lankan military deliberately targeted a hospital, killing 9 people. It's very difficult to establish the truth, though, because of restrictions placed on the media by the Sri Lankan government, which claims that news organisations have been too sympathetic to the rebels. The Guardian's foreign affairs columnist Simon Tisdall explains how the Sri Lankan government is attempting to control media coverage.
Well, there's nothing very sophisticated about it, John. They basically banned foreign correspondents and locally based correspondents from entering the combat zone, which is very similar to what the Israelis did last month during the Gaza conflict.
And you've written in The Guardian today that there's no surprise about this attempt to control the media by the Sri Lankan government. Why is that?
Well, of course, at one level it's regrettable, and we wish it wasn't happening, but on the other hand, it is very much in line with trends elsewhere in the world. Many governments, particularly in developing countries, that are under pressure, economic pressure and other kinds of pressure from security issues, are increasingly adopting this type of approach. You saw it in Zimbabwe last year when a lot of foreign news organisations were banned or thrown out. It was true during the crisis in Burma the year before last. It's also been consistently true in North Korea, for instance, where journalists are not allowed to operate freely. And as I just mentioned, Israel has followed this paradigm last month by launching a quite sophisticated media management campaign via email, lobbying journalists and so on, and offering access to officials, but refusing on-the-ground entry to Gaza by foreign correspondents.
Some of these governments more effective than others at controlling reporting of their particular conflict.
I mean, absolutely, yeah. I mean, Russia and Georgia both tried to lobby journalists last summer during the Caucasus conflict over South Ossetia. Both hired professional lobbyists to do that. But they weren't as good as the Israelis were last month in trying to get their message across. And some countries are absolutely hopeless. No one really takes any notice of the ban in Zimbabwe, for instance. And my colleague and friend Martin Fletcher is in Harare. They wouldn't want him there if they knew where to find him, but they're not in charge of their own country, it seems.
But how easy is it for journalists on the whole to get round this kind of management by governments? Very difficult in many instances.
Yeah, there's not a lot in the end media organisations can do against quasi-democratic or undemocratic regimes. I remember in 1989 when the George Bush Sr.'s administration invaded Panama, I, along with the rest of the White House press corps, charged down to Howard Air Force Base in Panama, having had great difficulty getting a flight at all from Miami, and were basically detained there for 36, 48 hours, a bit longer maybe, while the fighting was going on, such as it was, and only allowed out to do any reporting after the action was all over. There was tremendous outcry about that subsequently in Washington, and that led to new rules for travelling press ahead of the what became the first Gulf War in 1990-91, after the invasion of Kuwait. And that's what led to the process of embedding, which was so controversial during the second Gulf War, 2003, when journalists did get to see quite a lot of what was going on, but basically only what the military wanted them to see.
Simon Tisdall. In 1979, Rapper's Delight by the Sugar Hill Gang was released to massive success on New York's Sugar Hill Records, the label founded by the former soul singer Sylvia Robinson. But the roots of female rap go back further, as illustrated by a new compilation album called Fly Girls. It celebrates the history of women in hip-hop. Nikki Giovanni was part of the radical black arts movement. She combined music and poetry to make what we'd now call rap back in 1971. This is Ego Tripping.
My oldest daughter is Nefertiti. The tears from my birth pains created the Nile. I am a beautiful woman. I gazed on the forest and burned out the Sahara Desert. With a packet of goat's meat and a change of clothes, I crossed it in 2 hours. I am a gazelle, so swift, you can't catch me. For a birthday present when he was 3, I gave my son Hannibal an elephant. He gave me Rome for Mother's Day.
Well, Nikki Giovanni is now a Grammy-nominated poet and a professor of English at Virginia Tech. She told me what inspired her to combine music and poetry.
Well, I wanted to write something for little girls, because in the black American community, guys have so many ways of saying who they are. And little girls always have those little dumb, you know, little Sally Walker, or, you know, one day my prince will come, you know, all of that sort of thing. And so I wanted to do something that said to little girls, yes, you are. And then, of course, you need to put it in the beat if you're going to talk to kids like that. So I've been amazed, though, at how well that poem has been received.
Yeah, I mean, how did you react when you realised that the music that you'd been making in those days was suddenly becoming incredibly influential?
I think it's wonderful. But, you know, you have to go on. You have to do something the next day. You know, I just wrote a book, and it's called Bicycles. And one of the poems in it is called The Artist. And I was looking at the myth of Sisyphus, because everybody says the gods were punishing Sisyphus. I don't think the gods were punishing him. I think it was a challenge every day. You write a good poem, so you push the ball up the hill. You get to the top, but you have to write another one.
What did you think when rap became absolutely, universally accepted as a sort of an art form? And it was sort of everywhere you go, you hear that kind of music now. I mean, it must be very strange for you.
I'm an old music fan. I'm an old jazz fan, actually. But I love the blues also. My mom loved the blues. And we watched the cultural expression of the people will always override other considerations. So the people who and I'm just saying, you know, the folk art, the people did the blues, and then from the blues we're going to get rhythm and blues, and then we're going to get rock and roll. You know, so it's a continuum. Something else is out there. If I were, 40 years younger, because I'm 65, if I were in my 20s right now, I could probably tell you what's coming.
What made the rap music that women made different from the music that the men were making at that time?
I think women are less aggressive. And I think that we're more into definitions, like an ego tripping or Queen Latifah's, the queen is here, that kind of thing. And I think the men are always trying to say, well, we're warriors and we're great and we're going to beat everybody up that doesn't like us. But I don't think women do that.
I understand that you have a tattoo honouring Tupac Shakur.
Yes, I do.
What was it about him that inspired you?
Oh, he's a great kid and obviously quite talented. I didn't know Tupac, but I always liked his raps. He gave me a shout-out when he was in Digital Underground. And I thought, well, that's really, my son came home one day. He said, do you know Tupac Shakur? And I said, no. And he said, well, he's talking about you in his song. So it was kind of wonderful. And you know how you begin to watch a career. And it was a great loss, losing Tupac. He's charismatic, he's good-looking, he's creative.
Nikki Giovanni and Fly Girls, B-Boys Beware, Revenge of the Super Female Rappers is available on Soul Jazz Records. Today's edition of Guardian Daily was produced by Phil Maynard and Tim Mabey. I'm John Dennis. Thanks for listening.